We have talked about it endlessly over the last decade or so, and we've accomplished close to zip.
We know enough about our climate problem to know that it's serious and that we need to get started right away.
What we're seeing right now is a clear loading of the weather dice.
It's time for the Climate Cast. It's our weekly discussion about the science of climate change. Today, where wildfires and climate change intersect. NPR meteorologist Paul Huttner is with me in the studio. Good to see you again. You were on vacation.
Oh, it was a good week off.
I
spent a little time in Granmer. Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. I miss you. It's good to be in the studio with you again.
Good to have you back. So, Paul, I've been listening to you talking about the wildfire smoke and the weather patterns that have been bringing it our way. Is more smoke coming? Just to get that out of the way here.
There's a plume right now, a band across far northern Minnesota that is setting up. But here's the thing, Carrie, those winds are shifting to the south over the next few days at all levels, really, all the way up to 20,000, 25,000 feet. I think that's going to keep most of the smoke up in Canada the next few days. So that's some good news. Most of those winds blowing that smoke back toward Canada.
I have a feeling you saw this, that Climate Central is reporting that the wildfire season is 40% longer today than it was 50 years ago. And yes, they link that to a warming climate, too, in some ways.
Yeah, and it makes sense, right? It's common sense. You warm the climate, we're burning fossil fuels. We know we're warming the climate. And then the real wild card here is, Carrie, one of the unknown unknowns. What kind of a feedback loop does this create when we see increased wildfires in the West? And there's a very well-documented increase in that. You burn more land through the warmer temperatures. You change the landscape, and then you also put more carbon in the atmosphere. We've talked about the dark snow. Some of that soot reaches the Arctic.
Right.
It changes the albedo of the ice cover and snow cover, so it melts faster. That creates a warmer Arctic. The planet warms, and you go back again and get increased wildfires. So this is sort of a feedback loop, kind of a turbocharging of climate change. And I think scientists are increasingly watching for these feedback loops, this relationship between fires and climate change, to see just how much of a component it is toward accelerating climate change potentially.
Let's bring in our scientist and ask him about how he perceives the feedback loop. Eric Kaczyszki is a professor of geographical sciences at the University of Maryland, and he's in College Park, Maryland. Eric, welcome. It's good to have you on the show and in the Climate Cast.
Thank you for asking me to be on today.
Would you give us your assessment of this feedback loop that Paul just described?
Well, it certainly definitely is there. I mean, what we've seen in looking at fires in the boreal forest, which is probably where the smoke you're seeing in Minnesota is coming from,
right,
is that there has been a fairly significant increase in fire activity in the North American boreal region over the past 4 to 5 decades, and in the area that I study, Alaska, it's been particularly sharp in the last decade and 2 decades since 2000. We've really seen a fairly significant increase in fire activity. And not only that, we're seeing more late-season burning, and that actually adds more carbon dioxide to the atmosphere because you're burning deep organic soils that are present in these boreal forests that contain large amounts of carbon.
Okay, this is interesting. I really want to understand that. You're saying that the material that is on the floor of some of these forests, which the fires are penetrating more deeply, holds more carbon than maybe typical soils and material that we would find in any other forest. Why?
Because there's permafrost. There's actually, these grounds are permanently frozen in many areas, and so that cold, wet conditions hinders decomposition of plant material. And so you get these buildup of deep organic layers that in many cases are greater than a foot deep. And so what happens is when these fires burn later in the growing season, during the growing season, the permafrost thaws. And so the area that becomes thawed actually improves the drainage of these soils, so that when they burn later in the growing season, they burn deeper and release more carbon.
Yeah, Paul?
Eric, Paul Huttner here. You know, peat bogs seem to be increasingly becoming a focus of study. Do we know when these peat bogs burn that you're talking about, what the capacity is to add atmospheric carbon from these peat fires? Can we quantify that?
That's one of the big questions we're working on right now. So, for example, last year when we had about 9 million acres burn in the Northwest Territories, many of those fires occurred in areas with peat bogs. So I have colleagues right now who at this moment are out measuring the degree of burning in those peat bogs so we can quantify that better.
Would that create more than just a temporary effect of increased carbon release? I mean, is it something that it happens in a bad wildfire season, but overall it's not going to make that big of a difference in the amount of carbon getting into the atmosphere?
Well, let me give you a number here from our studies in Alaska in 2004. We estimated that during those fires, some 0.22 billion tons of carbon dioxide were released into the atmosphere during that 1 year.
Wow.
That is more carbon than was released from all airplanes in North America that year.
So the answer is yes. You can really see the impact.
And the thing is these deep organic soils take typically 300 to 400 years to develop, and in peatlands even more. So when you burn off all that carbon, it's unlikely to reaccumulate anytime soon.
You're listening to The Climate Cast, and Eric Kazishki is with us. He's a professor of geographical sciences at the University of Maryland. Paul?
Eric, Alaska, you talked about it being one of your specialties. It seems to be off to the fastest fire start on record. We know Alaska's warm much faster than the rest of the United States. Put this fire season into perspective for us in Alaska, can you?
Yes. So I just checked before I came on here, and there are now up to 3.5 million acres this year. And you're correct; it is the most rapid fire season to this point that we've seen in a very long time. It's certainly greater than the record fire season that we had in 2004 at this time, when at this time there were only 2.2 million acres burned. But in perspective, actually, this the amount that's burned on so far makes this the fifth largest fire year since 1950 in Alaska.
So, Eric, here's the question I have then about this. As we see the climate warming, is it also creating drier conditions that precipitation is not moderating? Is that part of where you see the climate change meeting up with the wildfire season?
Well, that's one of the you bring out a good question here. It's not only the warming that you're seeing, but the reason you get these large fire years in Alaska is because of the way that the jet stream, the polar jet stream, is taking shape. And so why you're seeing these large fire years is that the jet stream becomes semi-stationary in a region, and you have a dominant high-pressure center. And so that high-pressure center not only brings in warmer conditions because there's no clouds, it's also drier.
Okay.
And so it's really the combination of the warmer temperatures and the drier conditions when these jet streams become stationary.
Paul, we've seen the volatility of the jet stream, right, in our area.
Yeah, and across the Northern Hemisphere, really. I mean, that's an evolving area of research, is why are these jet stream patterns getting more stuck? As the jet stream seems to be slowing down, we get more of these blocking patterns. We're seeing a lot of that going on right now with heat waves in Europe and the western U.S. and this incredible fire season in Alaska. You know, Eric, I'm curious in your perspective on where all this carbon goes once it burns from the forest. We know some of it goes into the atmosphere. Some of it is transported as soot thousands of miles away and lands in the Arctic and Greenland. Your perspective on dark snow and the changes from this wildfire soot to the albedo of the ice and snow cover?
Well, it's, you know, what you have to realize about the snow cover is that these fires occur during the summertime, so it's not really impacting snow cover as much as it's probably affecting ice cover if the smoke plumes are carried across the Arctic Ocean where the soot is deposited on top of ice. So, but that's an area that I think people are, they realize that it's occurring, but it's actually something that is very difficult to quantify directly. It might be affecting the Greenland ice cap as well, in terms of, because that's one area where it could be deposited on.
You know, when I knew we were going to talk about Alaska today, I remembered that year of Snowmageddon in Alaska, and I went back to look at it. It was only 2012. I mean, they had a very high precipitation year not that long ago. So it hasn't been dry there for years and years. Why are we seeing what's happening, you know, this season?
Well, what you have to realize about the snowpack actually, even if you have a heavy snowpack that melts relatively quickly, it will run off and won't recharge the ground layer, especially since most of those soils are frozen in Alaska anyway. And so it's really the precipitation patterns during the summertime that affect the fire season.
Eric, thank you so much for the time and such great explanations. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Eric Kazishki is a professor of geographical sciences at the University of Maryland. One thing that you're watching, Paul, this week?
El Nino update just came in from NOAA in the last few minutes, Carrie. 80% chance that a very strong El Nino will continue through the winter. It could rival the strongest one ever in 97-98. Something we'll be watching leads us to believe that this will, in fact, be the warmest year on record. And higher chances of a milder than average winter in Minnesota. Imagine
that. You've made my day. Thank you, Paul. Good to see you.
Thanks,
see you next
Carrie.
Week. That's the ClimateCast.